All that's worth saying is Question Time Review. You've entertained me, Dominic Lawson. Lion's Tea Room's there. Question Time, the 12th of November 2020. The panel, Matt Hancock, Conservative. David Lammy, Labour. Robin Shattuck, Immunologist. Merin Somerset Webb, Commentator. Rosie Jones, Comedian. The venue, Dover. At the end of last week's Question Time, Fiona Bruce announced that former Speaker of the House of Commons, Lord John Bercow of Remain, would be a panellist this week. As with the announcement of Joe Biden's US presidential win, this proved somewhat premature. Last week, Rupert Soames disappointed, and previously, so did Shapi Shashagogoshi. QT's announced in advance panellists are going missing faster than Trump ballots in a voting machine. Shall we move heaven and earth to right this injustice? Will we do everything within our means to find John Bercow? No. The first question was about the vaccine. How many people need to be vaccinated for it to be successful? Matt Hancock, Conservative, said he didn't know. Are we surprised? Matt Hancock is Secretary of State for Health and MP for West Suffolk. Mr. Hancock was born in Cheshire and privately educated at the King's School, Chester, before studying PPE, that's Philosophy, Politics and Economics, not Personal Protective Equipment, at Exeter College, Oxford, after completing an MPhil in Economics at Christ College, Cambridge. He became an economist at the Bank of England before entering politics. Mr. Hancock's constituency includes the US Air Force bases at Mildon Hall and Laken Heath. A cursory glance on Google Maps shows numerous F-15s and Hercs, but a noticeable lack of rusty 100-year-old privately owned 6-inchers. The Hancock family business is Border Business Systems. Located in the Wrexham area, they are direct marketing specialists, a mailing house. They manage data for lots of companies and help businesses to find new customers. They've developed their own software which will help your business to integrate its mailings easily and efficiently into the Royal Mail's mail sort system. Good luck to them. Will the vaccine be distributed according to clinical need? Yes. Bruce asked Rosie about the priorities involved. Through no fault of her own and because of a cruel injustice of fate, Rosie Jones, comedian, was born in Bridlington. She also has ataxic cerebral palsy. Ms. Jones is a comedian, made famous both by her disability and by previously making a crude sexual remark about Greta Thunberg on Channel 4's Unfunny Last Leg show, during which Ms. Jones speculated at what Ms. Thunberg should really be doing while still aged only 16. How dare you! Having said that, it's difficult to dislike a gal who begins her routine by limping to the front of the stage and opening with the line, "Let me address the disabled elephant in the room. That's how my mother talks to me." Likewise, The Guardian's review of Rose's Backward show was a bit sniffy, especially regarding the story about the ambulance and the two lesbian paramedics. The Guardian having awarded Rosie only 3 stars out of 5, Question Time Review begins to warm to her. In 2019, Diva magazine announced Rosie to be the 94th most powerful lesbian in Britain, positioning her below former jockey Claire Balding and well underneath BBC presenter Sandy Togsveld. You may think your humble reviewer a little bit old-fashioned, but having lived a sheltered life in the debatable lands, he honestly didn't realise there was 94 lesbians. Rosie thought the vaccine should firstly go to teachers and others close to the front line. Hancock highlighted the vulnerabilities of the older, with 50 being a bit of a cut-off. "Not to children," said Hancock. "It hasn't been tested on them." David Lammy jumped in to lay the BAME card. Can the vaccine be stored and transported? Apparently it needs to be kept at minus 70 degrees. "Yes," said Hancock, a mine of information. "It's not a chemical that's made, it's biological. Then you have to distribute it," he told us. Someone who knows about epidemiology spoke, Professor Robin Shattuck. He told us that there'd be a family of vaccines, not just the first one that everyone is getting excited about. Professor Robin Shattuck, immunologist, is chair of mucosal infection and immunity at Imperial College's Faculty of Medicine, Department of Infectious Diseases. Professor Shattuck has published over 160 peer-reviewed articles and is funded by QT Reviews, old friends of the European Commission, and our other familiars, Bill and Melinda Gates. His latest paper is entitled Chemokine Adjuvanted Plasmid DNA Induces Homing of Antigen-Specific and Non-Antigen-Specific B and T Cells to the Intestinal and Genital Mucosae. Let's hope there's a good picture on the cover, because the title won't sell many. If all of this talk of induced homing and genital mucosa reminds you of Greta Thunberg's fingers after she's downed a bottle of Lambrini, blame Rosie Jones. An audience member mentioned Brexit, another the WHO. A third stated Matt was underestimating the distribution and supply issues. The speaker was a pharmacist and mentioned the distribution of conventional flu vaccines, which, in your review as part of the world, tends to be chaotic. Yes, we can, said Hancock. Lammy found this facile and mentioned that 9 months after the first coronavirus case, there still wasn't a successful track-and-trace scheme. We can do it, repeated Matt Hancock. Bruce fished for a vaxxer, which in BBC speak translates to someone hesitant. There were a few, perhaps three, out of an audience of 16. Merrin spoke. I'm not sure where she was. The windows seemed to be wide open, but leading to another room. Was she in a lean-to shed? The family are a bit eccentric. She suggested, to calm nerves, Matt might take it first, and then all of the other MPs. She sounded a bit like Voltaire, suggesting a few shootings for the encouragement of the others. The blurb that accompanies Question Time describes Merrin Somerset Webb as a commentator. Is she of this parish? Is she one of us? If only we'd paid attention to all of the unread comments. Privately educated at the exclusive Wickham Abbey Girls' School, Merrin graduated with a first in history and economics from Gonville and Caius College, Cambridge, and a master's in Japanese language from the University of London School of Oriental and African Studies. After finishing her education, she presented business programmes on Japanese TV before becoming an institutional broker at Warburg's. Later, she returned to London to work for the BNP. Not that BNP, the Banque Nationale de Paris. Subsequently, she became the first editor of Money Week magazine and has been invited onto the boards of various investment trusts. At Net Wealth Investments, she sits alongside a Bonham Carter, at Murray Income Trust, next to a Younger of Lochiel. Yet, despite all of this, Ms. Merrin is a bit of an amateur compared to her husband when it comes to being a potential puffin. Alexander Q.R. Sandy Cross, Esquire, investment manager, former aquaculturist and resident of Edinburgh, owns his own island, Vermentry in the Shetland Isles. Unfortunately, it doesn't include a dwelling, but does boast 2 6-inch QF Mark I First World War gun emplacements still containing actual guns. These artillery pieces originated from the Edgar-class cruiser HMS Gibraltar. Rather than threaten to kill people or spread fake news, Mr. Cross uses his Twitter feed to share photographs of his old treasured dark blue passport. Not only that, in the year 2000, a seabird census of Vermentry discovered that within 5 kilometres of the island, the bird population included 45 puffins. Mrs. Somerset Webb Cross may be relieved to hear that there was no sighting of any hoary pufflegs or horned screamers, but the surveyors did find evidence of more than 5 dozen shags. In the interest of equality of opportunity, Alexander writes for his wife at Money Week. In 2011, Mr. Sandy stood for the Scottish Parliament as a Conservative candidate in the Shetland Islands constituency. The chairman of his constituency association, Mr. Maurice Mullay, gushed to the Shetland Times, "We are extremely fortunate to have a candidate of Sandy's abilities, energy and background. His impressive financial experience and local understanding are tremendous assets, and he is clearly the best representative for Shetland in the Scottish Parliament." Unfortunately, Mr. Mullay's confidence in his candidate was not reflected at the polls. Even rumours of fake polls, the voting dead, recounts and software glitches were unable to overturn the result in his favour. Mr. Cross came last, with only 3% of the vote, even finishing 2,000 votes behind the local independent anti-wind farm realist. The professor reminded us that vaccines, along with clean water, were the two things that had completely transformed public health. He then spoilt his copybook by mentioning the trade-off between risk and side effects. The problem being, Professor, human nature dictates we all think we're going to be the one in a billion that it kills. Merrin wanted a linear future where things didn't change all of the time. A vaccine would be very good for business and the stock market. An audience member mentioned unpaid care workers. "There's a joint committee that will follow the clinical advice," said Matt. The next question was about Brexit and the vaccine. Lammy put on his bring-out-your-dead voice. "Oven-ready Brexit, no deal, the Good Friday Agreement on the table, the Port of Dover, tariffs, queues of lorries." Over to Matt Hancock. David Lammy, Labour, is the MP for Tottenham. In further proof that there's no such thing as big city ballot stuffing, the useless Mr. Lammy enjoys a majority of 30,000 and receives 60% of the vote in his inner city constituency. The QT panel tends to be drawn from a small and repetitive gene pool. In order to avoid falling into the same trap, a summary of Mr. Lammy's artist wife, £2 million house, boarding school education, residence in a better school catchment outside of his constituency, £650 expenses, bike, etc., 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 can be read in a previous review, QT Review Southampton, 4th of June. Interestingly, the local Dover question was all about Brexit and nothing about dinghies full of illegal immigrants landing by the hundreds every day. The professor said many of the vaccine companies were overseas. Well, yes, they are, Professor. Many of them outside of the European Union, as are Bill and Melinda Gates. The next audience commenter wanted to tax the vaccine industry to death. LaBruce did a round of the audience, all of whom picked Natchit from Pepper in order to bash the coronavirus vaccine, from Brexit through to not enough files to put it in. Mainstream media here have been deliberately very negative. Much has been made of the UK's record on coronavirus being the worst in Europe, or even one of the top worst in the world. These have been deliberate lies. According to Oxford University's Our World in Data project, regarding cumulative deaths per million reported on Wednesday the 11th of November, the figures for Europe are: first, 1,154 Belgium, second 850 Spain, third 733 the UK. As for worldwide deaths, the worst affected continent, much worse than Europe, is South America, a fact never reported by mainstream media. As for the second wave of the pandemic, the rolling weekly total of deaths per million population puts the UK in 17th place. First, 18.8 Czech Republic, second, 16.8 Belgium, third, 13.5 Bosnia-Herzegovina, 17th, 5.3 the UK. Another fact never reported by London's fake news media. Rosie spoke. She said she'd come to find things out, but was none the wiser and not reassured. Welcome to question time, love. Hancock was planning for the vaccine to be ready by the start of December. Bruce knew better, the middle of December. Merrin reassured Rosie. We're at the beginning of the end. Treatments are coming along as well as a vaccine, a cheap steroid. It's not just about vaccine, but about treatment. Mortality rates are lower during this second phase. Merrin was a lot better than Hancock or Bruce. Bruce was flustered. But the vaccine, if there's no deal Brexit. If there's a long queue of lorries, Merrin suggested sensibly, let the vaccine go to the front. The next question was about the US election. No, it wasn't. It was about the 25-year-old Disability Act. Rosie had been 5 at the time of the act and, as a result, had been to school, university, and had got a job. There were toilets for her that she could use, all because of the Disability Act. But she wears headphones when she's out and about, as she gets abuse on a daily basis. There was also a problem of unemployment amongst disabled people. Disabled people need more care and money and support. Lammy was moved. We have a long way to go. Lammy said one of his own children had a special educational need and then needlessly racialised the issue by referencing a blind black man being dragged out of the Oxford Union. He mentioned Croydon Council going bust as if it was everybody's fault except Croydon Council's. For some bizarre reason, Lammy seemed to think that local authorities do something useful for the needy. An audience member mentioned the 3-year wait for special educational needs diagnoses, but omitted to mention that the public service is full of bone-idle clock-watchers twiddling their thumbs or on leave until their giant pensions arrive. These things will be better done by the private sector, paid for according to results. Hancock pulled a disability from the air. He decided that he was dyslexic and that his language skills were poor. He might have a point. Rosie had had some kind of an allowance that had been taken off her. Many disabled people are on the poverty line because they'd been assessed by a stranger for 10 minutes. It made her blood boil. Stop ignoring disabled people. We make up 20% of the population. We're here and we're worth listening to. The danger of sounding rather trite, stop ignoring the US election. We've been doing the research the BBC is too terrified to do, and we're worth listening to. Although other authors and contributors have, rightly, focused on other types of presidential election irregularities, this author has concentrated on voter fraud through flooding Democrat areas with fraudulently allocated ballots and fraudulent electoral rolls. Voter fraud in Pennsylvania was explained in a previous article. Since writing it, I've discovered that in Pennsylvania, astonishingly, mail-in votes aren't disqualified by false signatures. Elsewhere, according to Georgia's own records, in 1998 there were 4,113,223 registered voters in the state. By November the 3rd, presidential election, there were 7,587,625. In 1998, 7.6 million people lived in Georgia. Across the next 20 years, the population grew to 10.6 million. Therefore, the population has increased by 39%, but the size of the electoral roll has increased by 82%. According to the state of Georgia's own figures, by the time of the 2016 primary elections, 24% of the electoral roll were inactive. Inactive means dead, or no longer residents in the state, or often in jail. I am grateful to Ray Pearson at Red State Nation for the following calculations. Ray focuses on Fulton County, an administrative area which includes Georgia's biggest city, Atlanta. He concludes the following. 2019 population of Fulton County, 2019 census, 1,063,937. 21.4% under 18, 12.7% are foreign-born, assume half are non-citizens, 4% have felony convictions, Georgia's statewide average, estimated potential voter pool of 751,826, registered voters for November election 808,742. Even assuming an impossible registration rate of 100% amongst those eligible to vote, tens of thousands of extra fraudulent entries are on the electoral roll. Ray also looks at the population and voter registration change. As with Georgia as a whole, voter registrations have increased way beyond the increase in the population of the county, especially since Hillary Clinton's loss in 2016. 2012 to 2016, Fulton County population increased 5%, voter registration increased 4%. 2016 to 2020, Fulton County population increase 4%, voter registration increase 36%. By Saturday the 7th of November, Biden had collected 72.6% of the votes in Fulton County. The Democrats have fraudulently swamped Democrat areas with ballots, registrations, mail-in ballots and representation, proxy ballots. A very significant proportion of these aren't attributed to an actual voter and can be cast fraudulently by someone else to increase the Democrat vote. This, in part, is how the Democrats have tried to steal the presidential election.